Folks, Field of Greens is the healthiest thing I do every day, and I want you on this journey with me. Why? It's literally one scoop a day. It tastes great. I love the fruit flavors particularly, and it's completely improved my life and my health. This is nutrition the way nature intended. When I began taking a hard look at why I wasn't feeling good and why I felt unhealthy, why I was gaining weight, why I was losing energy, it wasn't just because I had hit my 50s. No, it was because I wasn't getting the right amount of fruit and vegetables in my diet. And listen, I'm just too busy to go to the store, clean up the vegetables, cook vegetable dinners, and make sure I hit the fruit. A Field of Greens stepped in. One scoop of powder in my drink or on my eggs in the morning, and boom, I was off and feeling better. And suddenly, I was losing weight. I was sleeping better. My metabolism went up. My blood sugar went down. My cholesterol went down, and my weight went down. And my doctor said, hey, whatever you're doing, keep it doing. You know what that is? It's Field of Greens. That's what I've been doing. Field of Greens is radically different. Each organic fruit and vegetable was medically chosen to support heart and vital organ health. I trust Field of Greens to keep me healthy. I promise you, you're going to love this product. But if for any reason you don't, they'll give you 100% money back guarantee. Now, you're going to get 15% off your first order, plus free rush shipping because of the incredible partnership we have here at Just the News with Brick House Nutrition, and of course, Field of Greens. All you got to do to take advantage of this offer, visit fieldofgreens.com and use the promo code JustNews. That's promo code JustNews at fieldofgreens.com. Don't wait. Go to fieldofgreens.com today. Use the promo code JustNews for 15% off. Hello, America. Happy Sunday, and welcome to the Sunday brunch edition. I love this version of it. I mean, like, we're eating over, my eggs are over easy today, and I'm talking to you about some maybe not so easy stuff to talk about, but we got to talk about it. We got to be smart. We got to be educated. We got to have the truth so we can make good decisions. That's what I'm here for, just to get facts to you. You make up your own mind. I trust you to do that. Well, one of the places that we are getting such confusing reports is the Biden administration's policy on Israel. Joe Biden says, I'm all for Israel. Until I'm not. The vice president was really attacking Israel this week. And then Chuck Schumer came out and said, ho-ho, I'm the leader of the Senate, and I am calling for elections in Israel so that Benjamin Netanyahu, the prime minister, can be thrown out. Wait a second. Let me back up. When was it the United States' job to interfere in some other country's election? In fact, we get indignant when Russia and China and Iran try to do it here, but I guess we're okay with it when our Democratic Senate leader tries to meddle in Israel's elections, and not at just any moment, in a moment of war. Just think about that. What an act of arrogance, so many people have said to me over the last few days. Michael Oren's going to describe how Israelis are looking at it. He's got a very powerful response, very common sense of it. By the way, he's going to criticize Benjamin Netanyahu, saying he could have handled things a little better with America too, kind of cool the waters. We're going to start there. Victoria Coates is going to come in. She'll bring us up to speed on Israel, on the Haiti crisis. Let's keep an eye on that. There's a boat flotilla crisis potentially on the horizon. Haitians by the thousands or the millions coming this way. Victoria Coates will bring us up to speed on that. And then we'll also talk about that blockbuster scoop that we had earlier this week, revealing that Hunter Biden and his cohorts were involved in trying to sell Westinghouse and its nuclear technology to China. You got it, China. Victoria Coates has some very, very strong words about that. In the third block, Tom Fitton, a man who gets so much transparency for us in the world, suing to get information that the government tries to hide. He's going to bring us up to speed on all the different things he's working on. He's got such an important role in there. And he's going to also react to that incredible story we broke about the Ukrainian oligarch indicted by Joe Biden's Justice Department. Then Hunter Biden's on the other side saying, hey, I might be able to get you off. Just pay me $5 million. You remember that story. All right, Tom Fitton will have that plus so much more. He's always such a fun interview. You never know where you're going to go, but you're going to learn something from Tom Fitton. In the fourth block, back to Michigan. It's one of the most important consequential states in this election. Joe Biden's there. Donald Trump's been there lots of times. Donald Trump released a plan this week for how he's going to revive the auto industry after all of the EV crushing impact. The electric vehicle revolution turned out to be a devolution. Tudor Dixon, former gubernatorial candidate, one of the most important voices and rising stars of conservatives in Michigan. She's going to join us to lay out the landscape for us in Michigan. What's going on? What's winning? What's not winning? Why is it early voting early important? We talk about that. She's going to really emphasize that. And then in the last block, as I try to focus a lot today on foreign policy and national security, Bobby Charles, former Assistant Secretary of State, will be here, and he'll break down all of the world's crisis. It feels like the world's aflame. It hasn't felt this unstable since maybe the Jimmy Carter era, where we had Iran hostages and Cuban refugees and war and uncertainty and a Cold War that we seem to be losing to Russia. It feels like that to a lot of people now. And Bobby Charles will explain why the approach that the Biden administration takes to foreign policy, to security policy, is creating that instability and insecurity. He's such a trusted voice on this show. We bring him on often because he just knows so much. Former Assistant Secretary of State, former appellate court clerk, former chief investigator for the House Oversight Committee, the same committee that James Comer runs today. He ran it during a different era. Bobby Charles is going to really help crystallize why we should care about the crises we're in and why we're in them. We should care why we got there. How we got there, I think Joe Biden had a lot to do with that, but we'll see. See what we see. All right, that's a great lineup today. A big thank you to all of our sponsors this week. Factor Meals, I love them, right? Go to factormeals.com, use the JustNews50 code, and you're going to get 50% off. That's a really cool deal. Hillsdale, go sign up at hillsdale.edu/JustNews, and you can sign up for the great Victor Davis Hanson's course on the demise of American citizenship. That's a pretty good story. AMAC, you know where to go there, amac.us/JustNews. This month, you get a free membership that you can give as a gift when you sign up for one. And of course, Tax Network, they're doing such great things to help people who are in trouble with the IRS or in arrears with the IRS. Tax Network USA, you go to tnusa.com/justnews. That's another place where you can get started and get some great help. And of course, Muzzle Stick. You know the folks at Muzzle Stick. We had Leah Thomas on this the other day. All right, we'll be back with the Sunday Brunch Edition's first interview right after these messages. The former Israeli ambassador to the United States right around the corner. Folks, if you owe back taxes, fair warning, you're not going to like this. The IRS is mailing millions of pay-up letters. Millions, I say. Then it's up to the 20,000 new IRS enforcement agents to find you. Why the IRS targets you and not millionaires? Well, because millionaires have tax lawyers. You don't. You'll pay up. Plus interest and penalties. You need Tax Network USA, and you need them now. Tax Network USA has brilliant war room strategies to solve your IRS problems quickly and in your favor. Like a preferred direct line to the IRS, they know which agents to deal with and who to avoid. It's not all bad news for you because Tax Network USA learned of a special limited time IRS offer. They're willing to waive $1 billion in penalties if you qualify. So schedule your free confidential consultation to see if you qualify for this limited time IRS penalty canceling offer. To do so, call 1-800-245-6000. That's 1-800-245-6000 or visit tnusa.com/justnews. That's tnusa.com/justnews.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Welcome back to the show. Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer, who is the highest ranking Jewish American lawmaker in U.S. history, went after Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu this morning in a speech on the Senate floor. The Majority Leader called for Israel to hold an election during a time of war to replace the Prime Minister. Take a listen.
5 months into this conflict, it is clear that Israelis need to take stock of the situation and ask, must we change course? At this critical juncture, I believe a new election is the only way to allow for a healthy and open decision-making process about the future of Israel.
Joining us now to talk about these comments and the ongoing conflict is former Israeli ambassador to the U.S., Michael Oren. Mr. Ambassador, thank you so much for being here, sir.
Always good to be with you, Amanda. John, good to be with you.
Thank you.
We are happy to have you. And, you know, I think I would only have to be about driving age to be old enough to remember the Obama administration meddling in a number of elections. Israel, of course, Russia, Macedonia, Egypt, Libya. I mean, the list goes on and on. So I'm not particularly surprised that Chuck Schumer would meddle, because that's essentially what this is, in suggesting that the Israeli people should have this election. But during a time of war, that doesn't even seem wise as far as foreign policy goes. Politically speaking, it's unwise.
Listen, whatever I feel about Benjamin Netanyahu, and obviously my feelings are complex, as an Israeli citizen, I take deep offense at those remarks. Israel is one of a handful of countries in the world that's never known a second of non-democratic governance. It's amazing. It's one of our crowning achievements, especially given the fact that Israel is the only country on that list that's never known a second of peace. And as a result, our democratic system deserves a tremendous amount of respect. And what I heard coming from Senator Schumer was contempt, disrespect, not just of our democracy, but our sovereignty, which is very incompatible in relations between any allies, certainly between democratic allies, and certainly with regard to a democratic ally, which is confronting a desperate war. I have to ask a hypothetical question. How would Senator Schumer react if Israelis went to the polls and reelected Benjamin Netanyahu? Would that satisfy him?
That's a good question. Might have made that more possible, too. How will this be viewed in Israel, first? And secondly, is there any sign that Benjamin Netanyahu is going to let this distract him from the goal of eradicating Hamas from the Gaza Strip?
Well, this is not the first time there's been statements like this. Just a few days ago, Vice President Kamala Harris came out and said that her administration distinguishes between the government of Israel and the people of Israel, which is, again, a very curious remark coming from the head of a democratic ally toward another democratic ally, disregarding the will of that people. I think that the people who are against Netanyahu will grasp onto this and use this to further try to delegitimize him, to bring him down. Israel's relationship with the United States is of paramount strategic importance to us, particularly at this moment. They'll say that Netanyahu is in jeopardizing Israel's security by remaining in office. Those who support Netanyahu will rally more swiftly around him, more tightly around him, feeling that he is being beat up upon by Americans. And this has happened repeatedly in the past as well.
Yeah,
absolutely. And sir, something you mentioned a moment ago about if Chuck Schumer would be okay with the results of the election. I mean, he mentioned on the floor, he said, whatever the results are, let the chips fall where they may. So if he's okay with the results either way, it makes you wonder why he would want to push for it. But what do you think that Benjamin Netanyahu could have done differently to appease the likes of someone like Chuck Schumer? What does he think he did wrong? And what does he think he could have done better?
Well, I have my own personal opinions about this. I think we could have navigated a little bit better. We're in this strange situation where, the Democratic administration attacks Netanyahu, and that helps appease a certain part of their constituency, the progressive constituency, people in Michigan. And then Netanyahu strikes back, and that helps assuage people in his constituency. It's almost as if they're in lockstep. They have an agreement. I know they don't, but it can seem that way sometimes. I think Israel can navigate more. How should I say? More intelligently. If Biden comes out and says we want to discuss a pathway to peace with the Palestinians involving a Palestinian state, Israel can say, okay, we'll discuss it. Doesn't obligate us in any way. A pathway is a thing with gravel and with shrubbery. A path could be many different things. We can navigate more intelligently. However, on certain basic issues, we can't concede the need to destroy Hamas, the need eventually to go into Rafah and uproot Hamas, the need to confront Hezbollah, the need to confront Iran and the Iranian nuclear program. These are all serious strategic and in some cases existential threats to the state of Israel. And we simply cannot concede. There's no wiggle room.
Mr. Ambassador, I think the sentiments that you just expressed about maybe have been being a little more wise about it, I'm starting to hear that from a lot of senior Israel officials who often have stood beside Benjamin Netanyahu. Is there a moment of reckoning where he gets confronted internally and said, listen, you can navigate this better. We're behind you, but play a better chess game. Is that a message that's probably being delivered publicly and privately right now?
I know it's being delivered privately. I don't know about publicly. And whether it's being heeded, I don't know. Every country has its internal politics. I think much of these statements about Israel, going over the top, bombing indiscriminately, killing too many Palestinians are very much driven by internal politics, by the presidential election 2024. Right. And Israel has its internal politics as well. And the threat to Netanyahu today, in many ways, comes not from Israeli left, which is all but moribund, but from the Israeli right, which has been very much strengthened by this war. And so he is appealing to the right by saying, I'm the only person who could stop the United States and the Europeans from imposing a Palestinian state on us, rather than saying to President Biden, as I said before, well, listen, I'm open to discussions. These are my positions, but I'm open to discussion.
Mr. Ambassador, the United States has a history from time to time of supporting both sides of a war in some form to some degree. And I wanted to ask you about that with respect to this conflict and aid to Gaza. Joe Biden is not faring well in certain communities in places like Michigan, where you had pro-Palestinian communities voting uncontested to try to, you know, send a vote against Joe Biden and to voice their concerns. With the interest of aid to Gaza, the Inspector General for USAID has been raising the red flag left and right about the propensity for misuse and abuse regarding any funding that's going to Gaza, ultimately ending up in the hands of Hamas. Do you have that same concern, and what should we do about it?
Well, we know that a large segment of the aid going into Gaza does fall into the hands of Hamas. I guarantee you there's nobody hungry in any of those Hamas tunnels. They're nice and fat and secure. And that's a huge issue. It's a huge issue that none of the UN agencies will bring aid into Gaza. They're too afraid. So it falls on the shoulders of the Israeli military. I think even the aid that will arrive on the beaches of Gaza on that dock, which President Biden has talked about constructing, that's going to have to be brought in by Israelis as well, because the United States doesn't want to put boots on the ground. Who's going to bring the aid in? It's dangerous. Not only will Palestinians rush the aid convoys, as they have repeatedly, but they're also armed Palestinians, and not only armed Hamas Palestinians, they're armed heads of clans, heads of tribes, who will try to, you know, to grab that that aid before it can get to the civilians. So it's highly complex and treacherous work and dangerous work getting that aid into the hands of the Gazans who reportedly need them. Very, very difficult. If I understood the second part of your question, it's about conditioning aid to Israel on humanitarian assistance.
Mr. Ambassador, let me ask you.
I don't know if I got the second part of your question. There was another part.
Yeah, I think you addressed it, actually. Yeah, I think you got it. I want to turn to the other big news today. Abbas announcing that he will be handing the reins over to his right-hand man. I don't know how much of a change that makes, but it clearly is a sign that there's some maneuvering going on the Palestinian side, preparing for a post-Hamas Gaza. Tell us what you think is really going on there.
Well, they're trying to meet the United States halfway. Initially, Mahmoud Abbas, the president of the Palestinian Authority, appointed a very close associate of his to the position of Palestinian prime minister. The United States signaled immediately that this was unacceptable, because the United States has gone on record saying it wants a revamped or revitalized Palestinian Authority to move into the Gaza Strip. Now they're talking about a different candidate, a former director, former high-ranking official, rather, of the World Bank, who would be less closely associated with the corruption of the Palestinian Authority. Still, there are many, many steps that have to be taken in order to revamp the Palestinian Authority. Mahmoud Abbas is in the 19th year of his five-year term. 85% of the Palestinians in the West Bank support Hamas. The PA has almost no support. It's reviled. It's viewed as collaborationist. Remember, keep in mind, when we withdrew from Gaza in 2005, the Palestinian Authority went there and survived less than 2 years before Hamas overthrew it and overthrew it violently.
All right, folks, don't go anywhere. When we come back, Victoria Coates, former Deputy National Security Advisor, one of the most honest brokers in refereeing foreign policy, diplomacy, national security. She's up next.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/Wondery.
Welcome back, America. Well, my goodness, think about this. We got the sitting vice president's son trying to help China acquire our best nuclear reactor technology. We've got the Senate leader meddling in another country's politics. And we've got the border wide open so much that the FBI director said he can't sleep anymore at night. When it feels the world's that crazy, we know who to turn to. We turn to our good friend, Victoria Coates, the former deputy national security advisor to President Trump, who currently serves as Heritage Foundation's vice president for foreign policy. She'll make sense of all of this. Victoria, welcome back to the show.
It's a challenge today, John, but thank you very much. Good to be with you.
This is going to be a challenging one. All right. I think I understand the internal politics of the United States, Chuck Schumer trying to appease the left, but sticking our thumb in another election country's election, when we cry all the time when someone tries to interfere in our election, kind of a bad look to our allies, no?
Oh, it's terrible. And this is part of a concerted program that they've been on since the administration realized that actually standing staunchly with our great ally Israel in the Jewish state's moment of need was a political loser for them. And so they've been backpedaling that furiously. They've been taking actions, unprecedented actions at the United Nations. They've been floating, preemptively recognizing some kind of Palestinian state, whatever that might be. Right. And, you know, as we know, that might be the vice president's purview. So I sure know where that's going. And then, you know, to have this, you know, the extraordinary scheme to drop a dock into Gaza to provide more aid. So we're building Hamas's infrastructure. And then the vice president actually said this week that we have to differentiate between the Israeli people and their government. But they elected their government. You know, that's the sort of thing you say about a dictatorship, like you'd say it about China. And then finally, you know, to have Senator Schumer, obviously with the administration's at least tacit approval, call for new elections in an ally. I mean, how is this even remotely his business? It's utterly outrageous. And I think, you know, the rest of the Congress, the Republicans responded. But I mean, this is just, you know, an unparalleled, I think, breach of the alliance.
Yeah,
I think that's spot on. And, you know, unfortunately for Joe Biden, there are a number of these issues that, you know, they started pulling a different direction for him. The border is another issue. And now he's kind of trying to straddle the fence with respect to border and with respect to this issue with Israel. If you were advising Joe Biden, would you advise him to continue trying to strike that balance in order to hang on to both sides of his base or pick a side?
No, I think this is time to pick a side on the Israel issue. I mean, we have a pretty stark division here between good and evil. It's time to pick a team, put on your jersey, and decide which side you're on. And even if I were to disagree with his choice, having clarity on U.S. policy, it would be at least to some extent beneficial that we're not even pretending to wear the mask anymore of being supportive of Israel, of actually wanting to punish Hamas, not reward them for the October 7th attacks. I mean, as I said, having clarity, knowing where the United States stands is a good thing in and of itself. But we don't even get that. And, you know, on the border issue, it's the same thing. He's now insisting that Congress fix it when, as we know, it was his reversal of Donald Trump's EOs that caused the problem in the first place. So it is the presidential authority that needs to be exercised here. And he just pretends that he's powerless.
Yeah, That is remarkable. One more thing on this, because it was important to watch this hearing with the intelligence chief the last couple of days and all of the stark warnings about the border. But we were supposed to be talking about our adversaries and security threats. And for some reason, several of the Biden administration officials veered off and said, I think Benjamin Netanyahu is going to get thrown out. They tried to create the appearance that our intelligence community believes that Netanyahu is in trouble. Of course, precedes what happened today with the Senate leader. It was very odd. It was like a sudden shift in the hearing when those things came up. Was the Biden administration trying to do a little bit of CIA subterfuge during the hearing?
Well, I think they were previewing what Senator Schumer was going to do. Yeah. And if you look at the Director of National Intelligence's report, which is what preceded the hearing, the non-classified version, of course, has this weird section on Israel, yep, in which they say, you know, Netanyahu is unpopular. We expect there to be protests, massive protests in early elections, and a new, more moderate government is possible, because apparently Netanyahu is the problem with Israel, not Hamas or the Iranians. And so the other extraordinary thing they did today is the State Department announced new sanctions. They're not on Hamas or PIJ or any Iranian element or the Houthi. They're on more Israelis who are in the settlements in Judea and Samaria. And so they are clearly revealing their enemies lists. And Prime Minister Netanyahu is first, but he's followed by, I guess, the rest of the conservatives in Israel.
Unreal.
Yeah. I want to ask you about one more conflict that is percolating overseas in Haiti. You have a nation that someone once upon a time called it an S-hole, and people thought that was the worst thing that he had ever said, and racist and bigoted and all sorts of things. But you've now got nearly 4,000 violent prisoners being released into the country. You have a guy running the country now who I think probably would have made the Donner Party look like a garden party. Should the United States do anything, or should they just say hands off and let what happens happens?
Yeah, this is a mess. And, you know, there's a lot of blame to go around for the dysfunction in Haiti. You can go all the way back to the Clintons, who pulled a lot mm-hmm. of fast business down there, did not contribute to stability, to a failed United Nations multinational attempt, which was plagued by accusations of sexual abuse and then a horrible cholera outbreak. And if you thought it couldn't get worse, it absolutely can. And as you said, we now have, you know, these reportedly cannibal criminal gangs basically taking control of the country, which is, you know, it's grotesquely horrific. And of course, we are sympathetic with the people of Haiti. But the fact of the matter is that the vast majority of the middle class, the educated people of Haiti, have been leaving. And the Biden administration created a immigration kind of sleight of hand to make the 160,000 Haitians who abused parole to come into the United States last year look like it was just a couple of thousand, I think about 2,500. But the real number is closer to 160. I can only imagine what's going to happen now with this kind of violence breaking out. And unfortunately, it won't just be, you know, those educated people coming in. These criminals and these gang members will almost certainly infiltrate these populations. But as we were just talking about, you know, the president's stuck. He has an open border policy. Is yeah. suddenly the Haitians can't come in, but everybody else can?
Yep. Right. He has created the ultimate witch's brew on this. Victoria, you are such an important voice on China. The idea that a sitting vice president's son was trying to help Westinghouse be sold to China so they could get the premier technology for reactors that we built in America. And it happens after China's military tried to hack their way into it. They couldn't get it that way. They go turn to the vice president's son. How significant an issue is this?
It's beyond outrageous that Hunter Biden would be involved in any such deal with communist China while his father is the sitting vice president. I mean, just the glaring conflicts of interest are hard to wrap your brain around, but particularly with Westinghouse, because one of the things that happened to our nuclear private sector after the fall or the end of the Cold War is we largely ceded that space to Russia. And many of our private companies went out of business. Westinghouse was almost the last one. And if that sale had gone through, we would have been left with virtually no capacity to do our own nuclear construction and maintenance of plants, and no capacity to do maintenance for the plants of allied countries, which is another very important activity that Westinghouse is involved in. And so when we found this, not the Hunter Biden piece, but the fact that Westinghouse was on the ropes in the Trump administration, it was at the president's direction, right, a very important initiative to make sure that it stayed here and that you know the company was deployed and it has stayed in business and is one of our most important private sector partners and assets. And they're the ones, you know, who do maintenance on the plant in UAE, for example. All of that would have gone to China. We would have had China in the nuclear plants of our sensitive allies with their hands all over that technology. And that just is intolerable. But it tells you everything you need to know about the Bidens and their views of American national security.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Victoria, you know, Westinghouse at the time was experiencing financial difficulties. It happens. And sometimes you bring in companies to acquire to kind of keep them afloat. Why wouldn't Joe Biden or Hunter Biden, with all of his relationships that he have stateside, why would he not suggest a U.S. company acquire this? Because you've got Steve Mnuchin storyboarding scenarios where a bunch of Americans can possibly purchase TikTok. Is it becoming increasingly more difficult and possibly impossible for the Bidens to claim that the United States' interests come first before those of countries like China?
Well, no. I mean, that's the thing is for Hunter Biden, I'm sure it was who was going to pay the highest price and, you know, who would be kicking the most cash back to him in this transaction. And that was clearly going to be China, who wanted it the most. And so I'm sure the deal, whatever, however it was structured, was going to be a huge sweetheart deal, both for Hunter and for the big guy.
All right. Judicial Watch is Tom Fitton. Always a treat on the show. We'll be up next after these messages.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So, what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.
Welcome back, everybody. There's so much to dive into from tonight, between John's latest covering Congressman Barry Loudermilk's very damning January 6th report to election integrity, special counsel Robert Hur going before the Oversight Committee to testify, as well as the ongoing leadership shakeups that just took place over at the RNC, which were preceded by Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell announcing his upcoming departure from the chamber's leadership. And lucky for us, we have the perfect next guest to dive into all of these latest headlines. Tom Fitton is the president of Judicial Watch, and he joins us now. Tom, welcome back to the show. Thanks for being here.
Hey, good to be with you, Amanda. Thank you, John.
Yeah, good to see you.
Absolutely. And, you know, for our audience who's just now tuning in, you know, for a lot of us, we knew these revelations. John's been reporting on it for 2 years. But the two major revelations out of this report that, in fact, the driver who was driving President Trump testified that there was no lunging by the president of the United States, which directly contradicts star witness Cassidy Hutchinson's testimony. And it's interesting because you have the driver, which infers that he was in the car driving, and then Cassidy Hutchinson, who was not in the car driving. And then the second major revelation that this conversation took place between President Trump, then Defense Secretary Chris Miller, and then Mark Milley, Joint Chiefs of Staff at the time. And then 3 days later, that information, the approval of the 10,000 additional National Guard troops, was then passed on to D.C. Mayor Muriel Bowser, who said, nope, we're good. Why on earth do you think that Mayor Muriel Bowser, after knowing all of the intelligence, because I know she heard the intelligence of what could happen that day, why do you think she turned it down?
You know, my instinct is that they thought leftist agitators were going to show up in large numbers, Antifa, and they were hoping for and would did not want National Guard or significant police presence to get in the way of Antifa attacking Trump supporters. What actually happened was the lack of security allowed bad actors to engage in violent acts, unlawful acts in certain parts of the Capitol. And so that's what happened. I mean, this was a disturbance caused by a failure of policing. Riots happen, disturbances like that happen because of political decisions by those in charge of security, such as those running U.S. Capitol Police. And, you know, part of that January 6th disturbance was accelerated by crazed U.S. Capitol Police response. Some of it was the result of some Trump supporters going overboard, obviously. And then there's the mystery area where who was there that the feds were working with, and what about situations where Americans walked in thinking this is their capital and they end up getting arrested. So, you know, we're all supposed to take, you know, the leftist lectures as always, well, you have to be nuanced on these issues. January 6th was incredibly complicated in terms of what happened. And the left had this interest in pretending that Trump wanted to overthrow America and that every Trump reporter should be, every Trump supporter should be jailed as a result. And they're still running with it. You saw that with President Biden's State of the Union the other day.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That was such a good description of actually the complexity of the event. It is a complex event. One thing is not complex now. We know the January 6th committee tried to destroy evidence. It tried to hide evidence. It tried to move evidence to the White House and Homeland Security Department to keep it from Republicans because that evidence didn't match what they claimed in their taxpayer-funded report. And that follows a pattern, right? Russia collusion. We were told there was collusion using tax dollars. There wasn't. And we were told there's nothing to see with Hunter Biden. There was. We were told the laptop was Russian disinformation. It wasn't. The repeat rinse cycle of American people being misled by their own government and their own tax dollars being turned against them. How do we break this cycle?
I'd retract the January 6th report. The House Republicans should just take it, you know, say this is no longer a product we can vouch for as a U.S. Congress. It was created under unprecedented circumstances. We have evidence of corruption surrounding how it was conducted and such. So we're retracting it. It was not a bipartisan report. It was a Democratic Party report by a rump committee that had some Republicans, but who answered to Democrats and didn't represent the Republican Party caucus. So I just retract it. They have enough information to retract it. Yeah, and of course, you know, a more serious investigation even by the House would be well warranted. And, you know, and then there's other opportunities. I mean, we just filed a lawsuit, Judicial Watch did, on behalf of Ashley Babbitt's family, the only homicide official victim that day, shot and killed unnecessarily by Lieutenant Byrd of the U.S. Capitol Police, $30 million federal wrongful death lawsuit against the U.S. government. So hopefully we get some truth and accountability there. And of course, you know, the next honest president, given everything that we know about how the Justice Department has conducted this and the kind of the big lie of the narrative that the courts have bought into as well, should pardon and commute the sentences of virtually everyone prosecuted on tied to January 6th. We've got to, you know, if the Justice Department is out of control, one of the checks in place our Constitution gives is the pardon power.
Yeah.
That's well, true. And you know, my concern, though, is that, as John said, this is wash, rinse, repeat over and over again. And even if you take that initial product, the initial report from the January 6th committee, and you say we can no longer vouch for this, we don't co-sign, we're going to replace it with Barry Loudermilk's report, there still, I don't think, is an incentive for this to not happen again. Is there, I don't know if it looks like an ethics violation or an ethics investigation. I mean, essentially, this isn't a court of law, but this is a Brady violation. They withheld evidence that was bad for them, but good for President Trump.
Well, you know, the Ethics Committee in the House is made up of equal number of Democrats and Republicans. So that effectively ensures that an investigation that would arise from the ethical issues that you raise, Amanda, won't be pursued. But on the other hand, you're never going to pursue it if it's never asked or never put before the committee. And so you raise a good point. It's the sort of thing that the committee on its own should have been raising and Republican leadership should have been raising. But this is a, I mean, in some ways it's a dollar, it's a day late. Is it a dollar short? I don't know. But the truth never comes too late when it comes to government accountability. In my view, it may result in, you know, this not as much accountability as we want, but better late than never always.
Well, we get so much of that from your good work at Judicial Watch, too, Tom. The lawsuits that you do every day that bring to a light things that the government tried to hide from us, so important. Tomorrow, a big day. Robert Hur is going to be on the stand. The man who suggested that Joe Biden was too senile to be prosecuted for mishandling classified documents. What will you be looking for? We got about a minute left.
Why did Biden get a pass on the same fact pattern in terms of what the Justice Department say is a crime? And if the pass is that he had a memory issue, why is he still president? I mean, that's the simplest thing. One of the dishonest aspects of the Hur report was he can't get a Democrat jury in D.C. to convict Biden. Right. And this whole issue is about the partisan abuse of the Justice Department. And Hur's testimony, one way or another, is going to provide more insight on that.
We got a good one from Michigan, Tudor Dixon, my old colleague on the Real America's Voice Network, former gubernatorial candidate in Michigan. She's going to join us right around the corner. Welcome back, America. The general election is written in stone. It's going to be Joe Biden versus Donald Trump. Again, the rematch is going to be underway. While that's going on and the final few delegates are being counted up, a majority of Americans are looking at our chaotic southern border or the pains of President Biden's economy and saying, how are we going to fix this? How are we going to motivate people to get out to the polls and pick the right choice in November 2024? Our next guest, well, she knows a thing or two about this. She used to grace us on this network as a great host. Then she ran for Michigan's 22 Republican gubernatorial nominee, won the nomination, and she's been out on the trail meeting with real voters. She's our good friend, Tudor Dixon. She joins us right now. By the way, download her podcast, one of my favorite podcasts. Tudor, great to have you on.
Thank you so much for having me.
You have, I think, your finger on the pulse of what people are doing. Michigan is particularly in play this time. It's pretty clear to me it is from the polling. What's on the mind of everyday voters? What is going to turn this election in November?
Well, Michigan is actually really interesting right now because we've just had the mayor of Flint come out and say that he feels like Democrats are not reaching out to the black community here in Michigan. I think that's very interesting for Donald Trump. That is a group that he was resonating with in 2016. And then when you talk to people in Michigan across the state, all communities are pretty much saying, yeah, we really had a lot better life under Donald Trump. But I think it's a combination of the Donald Trump policies and then being hit with hard with Gretchen Whitmer's policies on top of Joe Biden's. The double whammy of Whitmer and Biden is so bad in the state of Michigan. We were just driving to a business meeting a couple hours away the other day. We drove through a town that is completely decimated, about three stores left in a four block stretch of road. And I thought, this is what people in Michigan see every day. This is why they're so anxious to see a change. And I think that is the opportunity for Donald Trump is to come in and say, we're going to bring those jobs back. I mean, we're losing manufacturing in this state. We're losing companies every day. We're going to bring those jobs back. We're going to bring back energy. We're going to make it affordable to live. And that's what people, especially the moms out there, because we're the ones buying groceries, packing lunches, getting gas, taking kids all across the state. And under Donald Trump, that was a lot easier and a lot less expensive to do.
Yeah,
it sure was. And, you know, a few days, I think it was about a week before the Iowa caucus, the economy is still very important, but immigration moved into the number one spot as far as what Americans are concerned about. And while Michigan is not geographically a border state, you are on Lake Michigan and Chicago is across Lake Michigan from you. And yesterday, the CDC announced that they were sending a team to Chicago because there have been five cases of measles and they are trying to contain them. All five cases are in an illegal shelter there. I know that that's got to be on the mind of Michiganders as well.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, we've actually had a massive amount of sickness in our schools across the state. We've actually had schools shut down for viruses this year. And so I've seen a big uptick in these kinds of things coming across the border and then eventually making it into states like Illinois or Michigan. But we have also had some interesting response from Democrats in this state about the whole immigration issue, because obviously we have Gretchen Whitmer, who has put out the notice that anybody who wants to volunteer to take in some migrant families, please contact the state. They're going to make sure that you can bring these folks right into your home. And that, I think, ruffled the feathers of some folks in the state of Michigan saying, hey, wait a minute, we can't afford to pay for the services that we need for the people here. Why are we suddenly bringing migrants in and offering them into homes of Michiganders? But on top of that, over the weekend, obviously, or last week, obviously, we saw Joe Biden's State of the Union address, and we saw what he said about the murder of Laken Riley, and it called him an illegal. And then a few days later, he's out there apologizing, saying, I actually meant undocumented. Well, we had a state rep in the Traverse City area, so northern Michigan, come out and put a tweet out that said, thank you to President Biden for correcting that. People in the state of Michigan
were horrified to the point where within 24 hours, she deleted the tweet. I think she understood that that was not a popular position to take, but she also got elected promising illegals driver's licenses in the state of Michigan. And I think that's just another pain point for Michiganders in the state. They're saying, hey, we're sick of, we've had Chilean gangs coming across the border, coming into Oakland County, Michigan, breaking into Michiganders' homes. We have state reps that are supporting this. People in Michigan are kind of done with the border. That's why it's such a big issue. I mean, here you think of Michigan as a border state with Canada. It's the southern border that's hurting the state.
It's just remarkable. Tudor, I think you hit on one of the two big dynamics that are going to, I think, shake up this election. That is the ability of Donald Trump to go into cities and realign constituencies for the first time, maybe in a generation or two. The other one is Republicans, I think, are going to play early voting for the first time. And that changes a game where Democrats have had the advantage of the last three or four elections. What's going on the ground? How important is it that conservatives and Republicans get in this game and show they can win the early vote as well as the day of vote?
Well, it's kind of, you know, we have to have this conversation with people who came out of 2020 and had this mindset of we can't do this. And so it's kind of going through and just teaching history, really, in the state of Michigan, because in Michigan, the absentee voter roll has always been big for Republicans. And we've always chased those absentee ballots because, let's face it, we have a lot of snowbirds. When it gets to be winter in Michigan, people leave. When it gets to be fall, people leave. And so they want to be able to vote ahead of time. And so it's very important for us to educate folks on the ground. You're not doing something different than we have in the past. We want to just make sure we get every vote in. And so I had a conversation with a group about this a couple weeks ago, and I'll actually be doing that next week again, traveling around the state and talking to folks about this, because I've had some people be like, well, we don't believe in that. And when I explain, look, you're not actually getting new people. I mean, in some cases, we will get new people to vote absentee. But we want to make sure those people that always do, that we're calling them, we're following up with them, we're chasing those ballots. And then I'm getting those folks on board and they're like, oh, yes, yes, that makes sense. We want to do that. And that's going to be key because every single vote is going to count in this election.
Yeah.
Tudor, we've just got a minute left. You have always been a champion of parents' rights. And just yesterday, the UK banned puberty blockers for children. Hallelujah, some sanity. Yet Democrats still seem to be supporting that for practically any age. Is this an issue that you expect Democrats to abandon before November, seeing how it plays out publicly?
You know, it's really interesting. I just had a therapist on the podcast who said that she's had patients come into her practice. And she said, I don't think that they actually qualify for gender dysphoria. I think there are some other underlying issues here. And she got fired twice for saying this. And she's pointing out what the UK is doing. I think there are going to be people, now that we have a lot more detransitioners and these terrible stories coming out, that her point was, this isn't political. These are people's lives. And a lot of these detransitioners feel like they become kind of these political mouthpieces, and they don't want to be. Mm-hmm. I think that we're going to just have reality come back. And certainly Democrats are going to kind of step back into the shadows on this now that some of these young people have come out and said, my life has really been almost destroyed by this.
Yeah, pretty remarkable. And these are all 70-80% issues that conservatives are on the right side of. They just got to win the debate there. Tudor, real quick, how do people get your great podcast? It's one of my favorites.
Yeah, check out the Tudor Dixon podcast. It's tudordixonpodcast.com. You can get it on iHeart, Apple, anywhere you get your podcast, it's out there.
All right, we're going to wrap up with a good one. Bobby Charles, one of my most learned friends, someone I turn to often when I'm trying to make sense of this turbulent world. Bobby Charles from AMAC, former Assistant Secretary of State, right after these messages. Welcome back, America. You all know how proud I am of the partnership we have with our good friends at AMAC. One of the great benefits of having that partnership is we get to talk to our next guest whenever the world feels like it's going crazy. Bobby Charles, not only the national spokesman for AMAC, he's also one of the most learned foreign policy security experts we have in this country, and he's joining us right now. Bobby, good to have you on tonight.
John, it's always great to be on with you guys.
I am old enough to remember when the Cuban flotillas were starting in 78, 79, 80, and the world, we didn't know what to do. It was such a shocking episode. It kind of feels like the crisis in Haiti is about to create a similar exodus, a sort of water-based exodus that's going to only exacerbate our problems at the border. What do you think?
I think you could be right, John. There's a lot going on in Haiti. You know, every 10 or 20 years, you have a complete and total breakdown of government there. When I was at the State Department in 2004, we had to send folks down, and we obviously have an air wing and some other things that we use. But, right. You know, there's a Marine FAST team down there right now that were just deployed. They're really to protect the embassy. We have other assets, significant, I think, national security assets nearby. But there are many layers of concern here, John. The first is the idea of an exodus of maybe, you know, several million people potentially out of that country because there is no government there. There are ruling gangs that are just pillaging what is left of Haiti. But there are other factors that I think need to be recognized. You know, one of the reasons that all this happened is that fuel prices in Haiti doubled in 2022. And you have to scratch your head, given that they import most of their oil from the United States. They import about 500 million barrels from us. That we are overwhelmingly the supplier of oil there. Why did all that energy become highly expensive overnight? And now, in the grand scheme of things, as you look out into the future, as we try to stabilize that country again and get it back into some kind of civil working order, what do you think China thinks about all this? Don't you think they would love to have their claws into Haiti and get a little edge on the United States at a distance that's about, less than the distance between them and Taiwan? I think they would love to have some opportunity there. So I think there's national security written all over this. And I think it also betrays a failure of advanced thinking by this White House.
Yeah, they're always fighting from behind.
I'm sure it would have helped if Biden had not put the kibosh on oil drilling in Texas and Oklahoma and Alaska and the XL pipeline. That probably would have soothed those gas prices a little. But I want to bring up the possible exodus that could be coming. This is a nation of 11 million people, as we say in the South. I'm sure they want to hightail it out of there and get away from everything that is happening in their nation. Ron DeSantis has deployed an additional, I think, 250 personnel and a dozen or so sea and aircraft to protect the state of Florida. I don't know what's going to be happening for the other states that, of course, have porous borders. Should Ron DeSantis be doing more than that, add additional personnel, add more crafts? And what should other states' governors do to be prepared for this?
You know, if the government worked, Amanda, the way that it's supposed to work, you would have the National Governors Association and 10 or 12 governors all working together to put National Guard on their borders, surging as necessary. You would have the Department of Homeland Security tightly aligned with the National Security Council, working day and night to keep our border secure, sending the message that under no circumstances will any refugees who are political refugees be taken in at this time, because frankly, they will all be repatriated immediately. And by the way, every governor will be empowered under Title 32, as well as the president under Title 10 for National Guard to turn them back. Coast Guard should be obviously surging in that area, which they have the ability to do. What you see instead is a typical absence of coordination by this administration, which throws the entire obligation back on states. And that's what Ron DeSantis is doing. He's trying to protect the people of his state.
Yeah, state stepping into the void for a federal government that doesn't do its job right now. It's really remarkable. Bobby, we got about a minute and a half left. I want to ask you about what I think is one of the most stunning things I've seen on a foreign policy stage in a long time. Chuck Schumer comes out today and says there should be new elections in Israel and let's throw out Benjamin Netanyahu. Meanwhile, Israel's in the middle of a war, but we complain all the time if anyone even sniffs around our elections. Is this not one of the more egregious interferences in a foreign election that we've seen in a while?
Well, it is. It's not just sort of an implied interference. Yeah. It's not just informational intrusion or pollution. If you go to 22 USC 2708, you will find that this is exactly the kind of activity that we criminalize in this country when a foreigner does it. So it's rather ironic that Chuck Schumer can openly go in and argue for a foreign, become the living embodiment of foreign interference in Israel, claiming that they need to have elections now. And interestingly, saying that they have to do it because there's an absence of direction and an absence of vision on the part of the leadership of the country. Gosh, that would seem to be a problem here in the United States. Maybe we should call for elections, snap elections right now in the United States. Now, the bottom line is it is a textbook election interference, and he should know better.
Yeah.
Yes, sir. I want to wrap up one more topic before we let you go. I have read analyses on both sides of the TikTok bill argument, from people who I respect and people I think are very knowledgeable and who also have read the bill. But I also know that George Carlin talks about bipartisanism and that it usually means that a larger than usual deception is taking place. What is your assessment of this ban? Is it a free speech issue? Should it go forward? Give us your thoughts.
What a great analysis, Amanda, that a deception is often hidden in something that appears to be some sort of modest solution to a problem. Look, as I have, John and I have talked about a little before, you ban TikTok and they'll just come back with Talk Tick. It's about having a master strategy to deal with our number one adversary in the world. And our number one adversary is a communist government that is more powerful and pernicious and unfortunately having a more adverse effect on us than the Soviet Union did during the era up until Ronald Reagan brought them to their knees. So I think at the end of the day, what you have to do is stop talking about the details and start, you know, the ripples are interesting, but the swell, the tsunami is the thing we should be focused on.
Yeah, that is some really good advice for sure, Bobby. Real quick, what do you think happens? Do you think the Senate will just kick this bill? We got about 30 seconds left.
I don't know. I think we have a situation right now where everybody is concentrating on minutiae and we have huge, huge problems in this country. And, you know, if we find agreement on TikTok, God bless us. But let's get back to the border and the crime and the economy and China.
All right, folks, that wraps up another edition of John Solomon Reports, the podcast from Just the News. A big thank you to everyone today. Ambassador Orrin, Victoria Coates, Tom Fitton, Tudor Dixon, Bobby Charles. That was a pretty great lineup. A lot of food for thought. Hope you enjoyed it. I certainly did. God bless you guys. We'll be back tomorrow. I'll have some more scoops this week, so buckle your seatbelt. I think you're going to learn a little bit more about January 6th. Maybe hard stuff to learn, but we're going to get it to you. All right, that wraps it up. We'll be back tomorrow with another edition. Until then, God bless you and have a great night. At Just the News, we break the stories others in the media ignore or are too afraid to tell. We did it on Russia collusion, Hunter Biden, and the security and intelligence failures that preceded January 6th. Our stories have real impact and reach because we stick to the facts. I'm John Solomon. You can help me expand our honest, unvarnished, and unbiased reporting by becoming a premium member at Just the News. You'll get an ad-free experience and exclusive member-only access to events, and you'll be helping us dig up more truth. Join today at justthenews.com/subscribe.